We invite you to Revelation chapter 21. We're going to be picking up the text at verse 9. And we want you to pay careful attention, not because of what I've got to say, but because this is about New Jerusalem, and that's going to be your home for eternity if you are a born-again Christian. I know I've said this before, even in earlier messages, but we want you to understand that this is your home, not your prison. And for those who will be living on the earth, it's their home. It's not their prison. But there are some wonderful things that thrill my heart, and I hope yours as well, when you consider that New Jerusalem is the home of the church. It's not the home of everybody, because there are some redeemed from redeemed Adam and Eve after Adam had sinned down to the end, who are redeemed, but they're not part of the church. The church started on the day of Pentecost 2,000 years ago and will continue until that event that we call the rapture of the church. And that's when Christ comes back and removes us from this world, so that in the phrase of Revelation 3 and verse 10, we are kept from the hour of testing that is coming upon the whole planet. That which Jesus elsewhere referred to as the tribulation period. So, just to keep things clear, the church is, among many others, us. If you're born again through faith in Christ this morning, you're part of the church. And it doesn't matter whether you come from a Gentile background, and probably almost all of us here do, certainly I do, and or if you come from a Jewish background, the background is immaterial. You are part of the church. And that's what we're looking at today, the New Jerusalem, the church. And so our first stop, her identity, and this is verses 9 through 11. And one of the seven angels, who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues, came and spoke with me, saying, "Come here, I shall show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." And I want to stop here for a moment. The bride, the wife of the Lamb. She's both, and yet, for eternity, we are going to be the wife of the Lamb. I hesitate to use the phrase Queen of Heaven, but In a very real way, that's who we are. That's exactly who we are. Christ is the King. If we are His wife, well, what do we normally call the wife of the King? The Queen, sure. But our point here is simply this. She is the wife of the Lamb. And I go back to over 50 years now, to our wedding day. Sheila was the bride, I was the bridegroom, probably the least important person there. But anyway, she was the bride. And this was really her day. But following that day, she was my wife. And probably even a few days later, it would have been rare for me to introduce her to another group of people and say, "This is my bride." She was certainly that on the day we were married. She's my wife and has been for over 50 years. Now, if we were in another situation where Sheila was introducing me to, say, her family or something like that, she probably would not refer to me as her bridegroom. She'd refer to me as, "This is my husband, Rick." And what I want to emphasize here is that for all eternity, we are the wife of the Lamb. And that's what the angel says to John. Come here and I'm going to show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain. Where did this mountain come from? Well, I suspect the new earth, but you know, you can argue with me about that. And showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. And that's the second thing. She has the glory of God. She's the wife of the Lamb. She has the glory of God. Now, what do we mean by glory? Well, in its basic sense, glory has the concept of brightness, of effulgence of light. That's probably not the phrase I should have used. But the point is that the light flows from the object of which we're speaking. And that is what New Jerusalem is. Your home for eternity is full of light. Later on, and we already read this earlier, but later on, and we're going to try and unfold this as the Lord desired for it to be unfolded to us, but there it says there's no night there. In New Jerusalem, it's never night. Now, that doesn't necessarily apply to the new earth, but certainly it applies to the New Jerusalem. There's no night there. And you know something else? Daryl and I were talking earlier about sleep and how much you get and all that, and what position you sleep in. And old people talk like that for the benefit of you younger ones. Anyway, the point here is, no, you're not going to need any sleep. You're not going to get tired. You're going to be in a glorified body that is so different, recognizable, because we'll know each other there, recognizable, but so different from this present body. It's wonderful just to think of a few things about it. So, back to our text, she has the glory of God, the holy city, the new Jerusalem that comes down from God out of heaven, has the glory of God radiating from it. That's your home. So, as I say, pay careful attention. You're going to be there forever. Not everyone will. It's not everybody's home. There are other righteous, as we said earlier, whose home is the earth. And that's going to be glorious as well. But this is the New Jerusalem, the home of the church. Now, beginning at verse 11, we want to talk about her physical reality. I was discussing some of this at Dowling Park last week. I think it was last week. Anyway, I got one of our new couples confused. And he came up to me afterwards and he said, are you saying that this is just like a state of mind or something like that? No. This is a real place. It is physical. And the reason that so many people have become confused here is that their theology, the grid that they look at everything in the Bible through, has forced them to make this some kind of a misty, musty, who knows what kind of thing. The New Jerusalem is a real place. It has physical substance to it. And that's what we're going to be looking at here now. And so we read in verse 11, her brilliance was like a very costly stone, as a stone of crystal clear jasper. Now, jasper is and before you science gurus come after me, I am well aware that chemically you can have the same stone and it be a different color. So I understand that. But the normal color that people would associate with jasper is a very deep blood red. But I have and I have seen jasper stones. I've never seen one that was crystal clear. They're always very solid. And so here is something unusual. But as John is seeing the city, the New Jerusalem, coming down, what appears to him is a jasper stone, a very deep red. And I find that significant because it's the color people associate with blood. And it's the blood of Christ that is covering, if I can put it that way, in particular, the wall of the city. So we want to emphasize, this is the first point, the wall is exquisite. Now, you may ask, why is there a wall? I mean, after all, who's going to attack this city? Well, no one is, but 2,000 years ago, people would expect a secure city to have a wall around it. It's just what they would expect. Even the city of Rome had, at the height of its power, and to be frank, who would assault the city of Rome? Who was left that would try? There was nobody left, but it still had a wall around it. And it had military and political significance. And if you'd like to stay another hour, I'll discourse on that. But since I assume you don't want to stay that long, we will move rapidly along. But what follows here is almost all about the wall. So, this is verse 12. It had a great and high wall with 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and names were written on them, which are those of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel. And there were 3 gates on the east, and 3 gates on the north, and 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. Now, I want to just comment here, and then we'll move rapidly along again. But gates on ancient cities were weak points. They were means of exit, but also entrance. And so the gates were oftentimes kept relatively small and relatively few. This wall has 12 gates in it. That's not a few. And the reason is because the wall needs entrance points. It needs access because there are people going to be coming in and out of it. And we'll come back to that very shortly. But the wall is exquisite. We read now in verse 13. I've already read that. Verse 14, the wall of the city had 12 foundation stones. Now keep in mind, this is not the city yet. We'll get to that. But this is the wall. It had 12 foundation stones. And on them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And, well, I'm going to skip verses 15 and 16. We'll come back to them. The city, he measured its wall. This is verse 17. He measured its wall, and he's measuring with a gold measuring rod. Now, before the advent of all the modern instruments that surveyors and architects use, measuring rods were very common. And while I doubt that these were gold, the scholars tell me that the pyramids of Giza, the great pyramids that everybody goes to Egypt to see, they were laid out with measuring rods. And they did a very good job, according to modern people. They have those things so square at the base that it's hard to find fault with them. So, here, John is given a golden measuring rod, and he measures the wall. He measured its wall 72 yards according to human measurements, which are also angelic measurements. Now, does this mean 72 yards high or thick? Well, scholars, again, are of different opinions, but my opinion, and that's all this is that it's talking about how high it is. Because in verse 12, we read it had a great and high wall. So I think this wall, I think the measurement is 72 yards high. I could be wrong. So he measured it 72 yards. Verse 18, the material of the wall was jasper. We've already talked about this. And the city was pure gold, like clear glass. We'll have to come back to that. But the wall was jasper. The city was not jasper. It was pure gold, like clear glass. The foundation stones of the city wall, we're still talking about the wall here, verse 19, were adorned with every kind of precious stone. The first foundation stone was jasper. We've already talked about that. The second, sapphire, normally blue in color. The third, chalcedony. And since you're probably going to fuss at me if I don't take the time to define these, I'm going to let Dr. Ryrie help us here. Chalcedony, probably a greenish-blue agate stone. And he confesses the exact composition and color of all these precious stones is not known. Sardonyx was a red and white stone. Sardius, bright red. A lot of red in these foundation stones, are there not? Chrysolite, golden in color. Beryl, sea green. Topaz, yellow green. Chrysoprase, apple green. If you haven't had enough greens yet, the greens are there. Jacinth, blue, and amethyst, purple. So all these foundation stones of the wall. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls, each one of the gates was a single pearl. A single pearl. Now, what I want to emphasize to you is, again, this is just the gate into your home. And no one's ever seen anything like this. Nothing even close to this. And he said that the street of the city was pure gold like transparent glass. Transparent glass. Now, and by the way, keep in mind, it doesn't say it is transparent glass. It says it's like it. But it's pure gold. The street of the city. This is where we have to go back to verses 15 and 16. The city, here's the point, the city is immense and beautiful. Immense and beautiful. Verses 15 and 16. And the one who spoke with me had a gold measuring rod to measure the city and its gates and its wall. And the city is laid out as a square, and its length is as great as the width. And he measured the city with a rod 1,500 miles in every direction. Its length and width and height are equal. 1,500 miles. And by the way, I know it's popular with some folks to perceive this as a pyramid. And I think the reason is because we've been infected by science fiction, which is 99 and 94 100% fiction, with just an itty bitty bit of science dropped on it. We want this new Jerusalem to conform to the pyramids and the ziggurats and all these kind of things. Well, keep in mind, if you go back, we can do this. But again, you probably want to get home this morning, this afternoon. And you could go back to the book of Genesis. And there you would discover that these pyramids and ziggurats, especially the ones in Mesopotamia, the Middle East, were designed not to bring heaven down to earth, but to bring men up to heaven. It was man's attempt to reach heaven. And if you went to those Middle Eastern step pyramids, you would find that on the top there was a flat area, and it is where they tried to read the stars. Astronomy and astrology were very much mixed together in those days. So the point here is that the pyramids were an attempt, and again, I'm not necessarily referring to the ones at Giza that we referred to earlier, but these pyramids and even the ones in Central America were not designed to bring heaven down to earth. They were designed for men to find a way to get to heaven. And so, although you could have a pyramid shape that would conform to these dimensions, you can have a pyramid that's 1,500 miles high and it conformed to this. There is an excellent reason. Just to save time, I'm going to ask you to take my word for it at this point. This is a cube. It is a cube 1,500 miles in every direction. As I say, you can talk to me afterwards or come back tonight or whatever, but this is a cube. And that's how 2,000 years ago the first readers of the book of Revelation would have understood it. So, it is immense and it is beautiful. 1,500 miles. Now, again, just to give you some bearing on this, I am told, I've never done this myself, but I am told that this would stretch from Montreal, Canada to Miami, Florida, and from the Atlantic Ocean to the Colorado Rockies. That's how big this is. Now, you may ask, do you think the new Earth is a lot bigger than the present Earth? Well, yes, I do. But again, I don't know. It's my opinion. But yeah, I think it's a lot bigger too. I think everything's bigger in these all things new things that our Lord is doing. Nevertheless, we come back to the spiritual significance. This is the third point in your outline. And there are three points that I want to make under this. The first is the temple in the New Jerusalem is God Himself. He sees no temple there because there's no need for another structure. God Himself is the temple, as we'll come back to in just a moment. The second place I want to stop is the nations inhabit the earth. All the redeemed of all the ages who are not the church inhabit the earth. That's their home for eternity, and it's going to be glorious. And then thirdly, the universe is pure. The universe is pure. It's not pure now. It hasn't been since Satan, Lucifer, if you prefer, rebelled and took a third of the angels in rebellion with him. And the angels became the demonic spirits, the demons, in other words. It hasn't been pure since then, not the universe. The earth was still pure. And again, I challenge you to go back to Genesis chapter 1. If you want to know what really happened and how it happened, forget all the science. This book is the truth. And what happened, as recorded in Genesis 1, is what happened. And it's how God did it. And all the rest, I know I've told you this before. Let me just hit on it one more time. All the science that I learned, I went to public schools, junior high, high school, etc., all my life. I was never in a Christian school or anything like that until I went to college. But the science that they taught me when I was in high school, a few years later, that was all wrong. And science had changed. And then a few years after that, that science had changed. And on it goes. But the Bible does not change. It doesn't have to, because it's absolutely right from the beginning. So, and if you want to know about how man and woman were created, go to Genesis chapter 2. That's the detail of the creation of the first human beings. And again, I know I'm straying from our text here for a minute, but Adam and Eve were the perfect man and the perfect woman. How could they be less? They were created, each one of them was created directly by God Himself. So how could, you know, they were the two smartest human beings who ever lived. I know we've got a lot of smart people today, but they were the two smartest people who ever lived. May I just direct your attention to one thing. After sin entered, after Adam ate the fruit and everything crashed to the ground, what did they do? They sewed loin coverings together to cover themselves. That's what the Bible says. Where did they learn sewing? Where did they get the needle? My point is, they figured this out. They knew how to do it. The problem with Adam and Eve in their sin was not how smart they were. It was a heart issue. And that's always the case with sin. Again, we could stay here all day and through into tomorrow, but we need to move on. So let's get to the spiritual significance beginning at verse 22 of Revelation 21. I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. You have them. What do you need a building for? What do you need a structure for? The city has no need of the sun or the moon to shine upon it, for the glory of God has illumined it, and its lamp is the Lamb. Do you notice how he keeps being referred to as the Lamb? He's not being referred to here as the King of Kings, the Lord of... And he is that, he always... But the point is, there are lots of other titles, but we're talking about the church. And for you and me, he's always the Lamb. He's the one who paid, who bought us with his own precious blood. I'm convinced that that's the reason when the appearance of the city is that blood red color, to remind us that what's inside that wall, that jasper wall we sang about earlier. Thank you very much, Hannah and your husband, for doing that for us. What's inside that jasper wall is the most glorious place that's ever been seen, and it's our home. It's our home. And there's no need of a structure when you have Christ. There's no need of external light when He is our light. And then, the nations inhabit the earth, and the nations shall walk by its light. This, the holy city, our city, is going to give light on the earth. So the nations shall walk by its light, and the kings of the earth shall bring their glory into it. The kings of the earth, these are the people who are God's earthly people for all eternity. And chief among those will be Israel, that is Old Testament Israel, is millennial Israel, all of these. And they're all redeemed. Don't think that these are some kind of secondary people. They're not. They're primary people, but they're just not the church. They're distinct from the church. And in the daytime, for there shall be no night there, its gates shall never be closed. Now, we just read about the kings of the earth bringing their glory into the New Jerusalem, and the gates are always open. They can bring their glory in continuously, as often as they wish. And verse 26 then says, "And they shall bring the glory and honor of the nations into it." Are there going to be nations? Are there going to be distinguishable peoples? Well, I don't know so much in what we think of today in a political sense, but in ethnic group sense, yes, there will be distinguishable people in the eternal new earth. And so, we have a wonderful eternity planned for all the redeemed. And now finally, verse 27, the universe is pure. And nothing unclean, and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it. Now, why not? Well, if you were with us through the last couple of messages, it's plain. All the unsaved, all those who have rejected Christ, rejected the light, rejected God's offer of salvation, are presently, when I say presently, at this time, they have met their doom, and they have been in the lake of fire, the second death. And so there's no one left except the redeemed to enjoy the new heaven, the new earth, the new Jerusalem. So, nothing unclean shall ever come into it, but only those names, those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. The Lamb's Book of Life. Is your name written there? Well, I really don't think there's anything more to say about this passage. You've got the outline, you've got the concepts that have been revealed to us, and this is God's revelation to us. Let's give praise and glory to Him. I'm going to ask our musicians to help us again. 213 in your hymn book, "The Light of the World is Jesus."